Welcome to Retrospective Radio, and I'm back here with part two with Don Owens of the Future Endeavors podcast. And we are here, we're talking about what's next for WWE as they move into Survivor Series 2010. We have at least one match already set for the show. It's Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett for the WWE Championship. John Cena being the special guest referee, and as you mentioned before, the stipulation being that if Barrett wins the championship, that Cena gets his freedom from Nexus. So where do you see that going?
Well, like we were talking about part one, I mean, it could go a couple different ways. One, if they want to just, you know, shoot through it and just get over with this angle, you know, obviously the odds are stacked against Orton, and it would make for a clear as day decision as to why, you know, Wade Barrett would win the title, Cena gets his freedom, and that's that. You know, I don't feel it's going to go that way. I feel that they're, you know, going to go the other route to where, you know, Orton will somehow prevail, you know, even though the odds are stacked against him. And, you know, and I think Cena will make a rational judgment call at the end of the match to make the fair count for Orton to win, and Cena will continue his realm in the land of Nexus.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, and obviously there's the wild card of Miz maybe getting involved and getting into the title picture, or they could hold off on that again. It does seem like, you know, obviously they're... If they do have Orton beat Barrett, and then they, you know, obviously they move into Barrett's, you know, probably feuding with Cena or, you know, building that match anyway, Orton needs someone to wrestle, you know, and Miz kind of seems like a good candidate at this point.
I don't really see anybody else as far as the face side really up top there to challenge Orton, probably other than Miz, you know, for sure.
Yeah. I think Punk, it would, and Orton could be a good feud, but I don't think, I think Punk's right now going to be probably with Daniel Bryan. So that's probably in the cards for later, but right now probably not going to happen. And yeah, I think we can probably safely assume that there's going to be some sort of Daniel Bryan and something involving him and CM Punk, whether it's, you know, singles match, three-way with Ziggler, some sort of Survivor Series match. Maybe Punk and Bryan could be co-captains and, you know, kind of feud over being captains of their team. Or, you know, there's a lot of different ways they can go with that too.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely be involved in some sort of Survivor Series match, elimination style match there that will involve, you know, Punk, Bryan, and you know, Ziggler on the opposite team.
Yeah. And SmackDown title, we talked about this a little bit already, but you know, definitely Kane against Edge makes sense. Where would you see that match going if it happens?
I think it's just going to be a typical one-on-one match. I would guess that Kane would retain at that point, just because, you know, I have a feeling they're obviously going to continue the feud with The Undertaker when he gets back from this whole buried alive angle. So, you know, or you know, I would hope, honestly, I would hope that maybe they would have him drop the belt to Edge, so then when Undertaker does get back, their feud can continue without having to drag the title down in with it. Because I think we've talked about this before. I mean, the title being involved in the Undertaker-Kane feud doesn't make sense. It's not worth it. It doesn't seem to help the feud flow any better. It doesn't feel like the passion's there to be like, this whole thing revolves around the belt. No, it's a personal issue between the two. So I think the smartest move would be to get the belt off of Kane and let somebody else actually run with it and defend it and have some good matches. And then, you know, that the Undertaker-Kane feud can continue in a non-title route.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, and, you know, there was obviously, you know, there was thought before that Undertaker would be wrestling at Survivor Series with it being the 20th anniversary of his debut. But looks like if it's true that Taker has an injured shoulder and is going to have to be out, that won't happen. I don't know if they'll think of anything else they could do to signify it being a 20th anniversary, whether they could just have some sort of supernatural events type thing that reminds you that Taker's, coming back, or if they just simply did like a video package, or had somebody dedicate their match to the Undertaker. I that doesn't really feel like something that Edge would do, especially given his rivalry with Undertaker. But there's different ways you could probably commemorate that somehow.
Yeah, I think you'll definitely have the supernatural aspect come into play at some point. A lightning strike, his gong, his symbol appearing somewhere.
Yeah.
After the Buried Alive match at Bragging Rights, they were showing the grave, and the lights went out and the gong came on and the lightning strike, and the typical thunderbolt to the head of the tombstone hit, which I think they'd done before in Buried Alive matches, and the music was playing, and his symbol showed up on the tombstone pretty much out of nowhere. And they're already kind of going that whole supernatural route. Like, obviously, his soul has survived and it's, left the grave. So you'll definitely get some sort of, Undertaker resemblance at Survivor Series. He could even show up, from what I hear, he might not even, be out all that long. I think the original plan was to do Buried Alive at Survivor Series. I think they pumped it up to Bragging Rights just to kind of help sell the card, to help push the pay-per-view with a big solid match like that. Just due to the fact that there was, three pay-per-views within 5 weeks, and, the UFC pay-per-view was just the night before. So, a lot of people, they had to really put out that incentive to buy the pay-per-view. So I think they were kind of under pressure to put a big match like that onto the, pay-per-view to help sell it. So, I think Undertaker's presence will be felt. Even a simple gong or a lightning bolt could be enough of a distraction to Kane to have him lose the title. I could see it happening. Kane looking around, waiting for Undertaker, and then when he turns back around, he gets speared, and, he could, lose the title that way, too. So there's definitely a lot of ways it can go.
Yeah, I could see something like that, definitely. Yeah, there's obviously a lot of different directions. But yeah, I think it would be good for them to, even if he can't be involved directly, to have some sort of presence for him, for the 20th anniversary, because that, in theory, could, especially if he would have been able to wrestle, I think that really could have been a big deal. I think that could have made Survivor Series do better than usual. I don't know, maybe I'm just nostalgic for that kind of thing, but I do enjoy that. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else that, we can say right now that, seems like, like a clear direction they're going to in Survivor Series. I don't know if there's anything off the top of your head that you could see.
No, not really. I mean, there's still, almost 4 weeks away to Survivor Series. I was actually really surprised that they even booked the Wade and Orton match already tonight. I figured we wouldn't get any matches announced until at least next week. I think what you're going to have is you're going to have your two title matches, and I think the rest of the card, beyond a Divas match will probably be, I'm hoping the, Survivor Series style old school elimination matches.
Yeah, I hope they have at least one, although, yeah, played out is not the right word, but I mean they've had this would be the third in 3 or 4 months since SummerSlam, and it obviously probably wouldn't be in a main event slot. I guess not that the last one was necessarily either, but I think they probably looking back on it, probably doing 3 and 4 months probably is a little bit of overkill, but. But it's still the Survivor Series, and you want to at least do one, and that would be fun. There's a lot of different ways you could do it. Maybe you could even have Nexus, involved in one, or maybe they defend the tag titles, or, obviously there'll be a women's match. And, one thing that, you just made me think of is that it seems like lately in the last 2-3 months in particular, they really have not been announcing a whole lot of matches. They'll announce 3 or 4 key ones, but then they'll add matches at the pay-per-view itself. What do you think of that?
I hate it. I truly hate it. There's nothing I hate more than, there's been a couple times in the past couple months where day of the pay-per-view, you literally have four matches announced or five matches announced. You know, a typical pay-per-view card is usually at the least seven matches. You usually have about seven or eight. So the fact of the matter that, you know, when they announce only four or five, it is kind of a, you know, it's a slap in my face, I almost feel like. You know, I as a fan, I take that pretty personally. You know, you're asking me to fork over $55 to order a pay-per-view. I want to know what the whole card's going to be. You know, I don't, you know, it's like, sometimes it's cool to have, like, a surprise. And if they have the time, I like when they throw out an extra bonus match, you know, with the time limit that they have. But give me a full card, though, and then give me an extra match as a bonus. Don't short me on the card and then make me have to wait to the actual event to find out what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Bragging Rights, I mean, you know, the tag team match, the spontaneous tag team match of Bragging Rights was a nice little surprise. But, you know, they added Goldust and Ted DiBiase literally Sunday afternoon. You know, and it's just like, it doesn't make sense. You know, a Night of Champions, where their full advertisement is all about the one time a year where every title is defended, they didn't even announce the tag team title match until you were watching the pay-per-view. You know, I mean, stuff like that is just stupid. I mean, why not advertise what your card's going to be? There's really no reason to it. You know, don't sell me on a pay-per-view based off a couple matches. You know, obviously we're going to have a couple main event matches, and obviously that's going to be mainly what people buy it for. But the fact of the matter is I love when they run down a full stacked card, and I want to see that, and I want to be prepared for that, and I want to know what I'm getting involved with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems like, I don't know if laziness is the right word, but it seems like, you know, it's like, yeah, we can't even be bothered to give you a whole card, or we can't, or we just, we're so not confident in our plans, in our direction going forward, that we're not willing to commit to it. It's almost like being in a relationship with a girl who's not really, like, you can't really, like, count on her, like, entirely, you know. You know, it's just like, well, I don't know what I'm going to be doing that day, so I'm not willing to firm up plans with you, or, you know, that kind of thing. It's, you know, yeah, it shows like a lack of, almost like a lack of respect in a way.
It is, yeah. You know, I mean, it's, when you're asking somebody to fork over that much money to watch your special, you know, I mean, you should be advertising it and milking it for everything that's worth to get every single buy. You know, there's somebody out there that would have probably ordered the pay-per-view just based on, you know, knowing what the tag team match was going to be and that it was going to be a gauntlet and there was going to be a five-team match, you know, they could have pumped that up. And so somebody out there would have been like, oh, shit, they're going to do that? And they would, you know, and they would have bought it and they would have got an extra buy.
I can't possibly imagine who that human being is. But okay, I will, I believe you.
Come on, there's somebody out there. There's somebody that likes even the worst wrestler. Hey, man, you never know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I've been surprised with the people I've met and some of the superstars that these people like and cheer for sometimes, you know, and you're like, whoa, you like that person, you know? I mean, somewhere out here there's a website, you know, dedicated to Doink the Clown. You know, I mean, so, you know, there's going to be stuff out there. People are going to support stuff. And all it takes is just, you know, the right promotion to get people to buy stuff. And, you know, obviously saying that is a stretch, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's something like that, you know, is very possible where, you know, with the right advertisement, that could have been enough, you know, to sell an extra buy, you know, and in this economy and with the down, you know, with all their pay-per-views doing less than what they did the year before, you know, I mean, they should be milking every pay-per-view for what it's worth, not, you know, selling this on a half-assed card, you know. I mean, I forget which pay-per-view it was, but there was a pay-per-view. It might have even been Hell in a Cell. I can't even remember, but that was literally only four matches announced, and that is just, you know, that is a complete joke.
Yeah, yeah, I do think. Yeah, like I said, one match in once in a while is fine, but yeah, you should be able to flesh out a card pretty well and be able to commit to something. You know, I mean, there's really no reason why DiBiase and Goldust couldn't have been announced. I mean, they've obviously been building to that for weeks, so, you know, I mean, you know, why not announce it at the last show? I mean, there was no reason not to do it. And, you know, yeah, I just feel like, I think the one thing is that, like, even if I'm not necessarily thinking that those matches are necessarily going to sell a pay-per-view, but for the live crowd, when you expect a match and, you know, you're going to naturally anticipate it and be a little bit more invested in it than if it's thrown out there just randomly. And I think that helps your show because that keeps your crowd involved. That makes the enjoyment of the show better, and that, you know, and that helps in that way. I think it helps.
Definitely. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit on you. You were talking about, you know, we were talking about the traditional Survivor Series matches, and you're talking about a little bit of an overkill. You know, yes, we had the 7-7 match at SummerSlam, and then we just had the bragging rights. You know, but once again, we're talking about, you know, Survivor Series, and that is a key. You know, that motive has obviously been lost over the last several years, but, you know, that was the whole point of this pay-per-view, was team-on-team elimination-style matches. You know, regardless that they've done a couple in the past couple months, I don't think that you know, would affect me not wanting to see a couple more of them in Survivor Series. You know, because Survivor Series is going to mix it up a lot more than what they've done the last couple months. You know, at SummerSlam, you know, it was the fact of Nexus versus Team WWE, you know. And then at Bragging Rights, of course, you have the Raw versus SmackDown. Whereas, you know, at Survivor Series, especially if they do it like the last couple of years, one thing that's pretty cool is you're going to get the mixed-up teams that are going to involve Raw and SmackDown superstars mixed in together on the same team,
mm-hmm.
you know, taking on another mixed team. Like you said, I mean, you could have a Nexus versus another mixed-up team. You know, they could do a Divas version of it. You know, there's a lot more they can do with it that's going to be, and they're not going to do 7-on-7. You know, they could do 5-on-5. You know, or 4-on-4. You know, they can make it a little bit smaller based and to kind of just mix it up. So I mean, they could spin it in its own way that's going to make it, you know, pretty exciting to watch.
Yeah. You know, one thing I would have liked to see with the Survivor Series that they never did was I always thought it would have been cool if, let's just say on Raw, they had, like, a sign, like, let's say, just for sake, we're going to have 4, you know, Survivor Series matches, and then, you know, you have 8 captains, and then the captains are, like, allowed to, like, pick, like, wrestlers, and you kind of, like, build to, like, you know, the captains, like, picking the teams. And then that sets up for, like, you know, then, you know, you do it over a couple weeks and then you establish your teams. And then, I don't know, I think there's something, like, more personal about that when you have, like, you know, and then, like, a guy can be mad, like, that he was picked, like, near the last, that he thinks, like, oh, I deserve better than that. So that's my motivation, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, I think that's kind of, like, that'd be a cool thing that they could try to do that would, you know, just jazz it up a little bit.
Yeah, that could be interesting. You know, I think with the fact of the way that they just did it, though, for bragging rights, with the whole Big Show being team captain and Miz being team captain and really, you know, pushing to build their teams and the guys qualifying and all that stuff. I mean, if they kind of did that again at Survivor Series, I think that might be a little bit played out.
Okay.
Just being that close to the way that they just did it for bragging rights.
Yeah.
You know, if the bragging rights teams was more of just like announced and it was just like, boom, here's our best of the best, then, you know, that'd be a cool concept for Survivor Series. But
yeah,
that's kind of what they did, you know, with you know, the bragging rights teams, you know, with Big Show forcing Caval to have to qualify, you know, and showing why he deserves to be on the team and, you know, stuff like that, and then losing the spot to Tyler Rex. And, you know, I mean, just, you know, we just went through all that, you know, so, I mean, that might be a little bit too close, you know,
yeah,
between those two pay-per-views.
That's a decent point. I kind of forgotten about that, particularly the Caval Tyler Rex. I mean, I do think there's a difference between, you know, you being able to pick and in qualifying, which, you know, most of them were qualifying. There were a couple obviously
right.
that were picked. But, yeah, you do make a good point. That is a little close. Maybe you could do it with one of the lower card matches. But, yeah, you wouldn't want to do that throughout the entire thing. I will definitely concede that. So, yeah, I think we, you know as much about Survivor Series 2010 as we'll know right now. But, you know, obviously the Survivor Series itself is one of my favorite pay-per-views. And I, you know, I've always enjoyed, you know, having the teams together and, you know, just kind of having the different combinations. And especially in the early days, I mean, they were always like really like long, fun matches. But, you know, you just, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, in 87, 88, you know, through, you know, 90 or 91, whenever it stopped being all elimination style team matches, you know, that was during an era where you did not see star against star, you know, very often, except for on pay-per-view. And, you know, in this case, you know, you saw a lot more finishes than you would ever see on television or even on a normal pay-per-view, because you had just had, you know, obviously you had lots of falls in every match.
Yeah. So, you know, Survivor Series for me, like you said, I mean, one of my all-time favorite pay-per-views. You know, this is one of the original Big Four. You know, and going back, you know, to the original days, you know, when I had to kind of, somebody said, you know, what's your favorite pay-per-views? You know, I always said Royal Rumble was my favorite, and that was very closely followed by Survivor Series. And Survivor Series has always been my second favorite pay-per-view of the year, and that was mainly due to the elimination matches. You know, I love elimination-style matches. That's why I was stoked that the SummerSlam match and the Bragging Rights match were turned into elimination matches, because when you have that many guys in the ring, it just makes for a more exciting match.
Yes.
You know, the Bragging Rights match, you know, was so big, and it's like, to have 7-on-7, you got 14 guys of the top caliber, and all it takes is one pin and the match is over. You know, like, that would have just, I would have thought it was so lackluster, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I love the whole, like, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, and then especially when it gets towards the end and somebody's on a team by themselves but taking on three members of the other team, you know, and having to weather the storm. And, you know, I mean, the concept is just great, you know, and I loved it way back in the day. You know, I hated, you know, around the early 2000s there, maybe mid-2000s, when they actually got completely away from it. There was a couple of years where they didn't do any Survivor Series elimination matches, and I thought that was just such a joke.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to have this pay-per-view and not even do one to kind of at least keep the theme going? But I was glad a couple of years ago they brought it back again, and it's been fun. Like I said, last year I thought was really cool because they started allowing the teams to be mixed. Because when they brought it back, it was still kind of brand separate. You know, you still had your SmackDown team versus SmackDown team, Raw team versus Raw team. Last year, they were allowing the teams to be mixed up, so you had Raw guys, you had ECW guys, you had SmackDown guys, you had three brands kind of getting mixed up on the teams, you know, fighting each other. And they're just always really super exciting matches, and I love this favorite. Yeah.
Definitely, definitely. And what are some of your favorite Survivor Series matches?
All right, so not all of them are full-on Survivor Series elimination style. You know, there were some great one-on-one matches.
Oh, yeah.
Also, that I'll touch upon. But as far as my memory serves, I'll tell you one of my earliest. You know, of course, you have your old school, like you were talking about, like the Hogans and the Macho Mans and all that stuff. But from when I started ordering pay-per-views back in the early 90s, one of the very first Team Survivor Series matches I remember watching that I loved was the Team Bad Guys versus the Teamsters. And this was the 1994 Survivor Series. And on the Bad Guys, you had Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 Kid, British Bulldog, and the Head Shrinkers. And the team of the Teamsters was Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Owen Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and Double J, Jeff Jarrett. And I love this match because this was the match where Diesel was kind of starting to break out on his own, and he was pretty, you know, he was dominating. He came in and he was just jackknifing everybody. He eliminated 1-2-3 Kid, he eliminated Bulldog, he eliminated the Head Shrinkers. I mean, he was just going nuts, man. He was powerbombing everybody. And this is the one where he was about to eliminate Razor Ramon, and Shawn Michaels tagged himself in and said, hold him up, and Razor ducked, and he ended up super kicking Diesel, and Diesel got eliminated, and that was pretty much the breakup of their friendship, was from the Survivor Series match. And I always have a fond memory of this one, because it was when I first was really getting into it, and I'll never forget that one right there. So that was 94. I love that one. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. That was a good one. I also liked the Backlund Bret Hart match. The story, the match itself is a little, there was, he spends, you know, probably 10 minutes in that submission hold. So it was a little dull, but at least the drama of, you know, Bret's mom, you know, wanting if she should throw the towel, and Owen, you know, begging her to do it and all that was pretty good. And also in the main event, you get Chuck Norris as special referee of the Undertaker-Yokozuna casket match. So, you know, that's always anytime you can get Chuck Norris involved in professional wrestling, it's a dream team, that's for sure.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah, 94 Survivor Series was a tight one for me. 95 gave us a great match with Diesel losing his one-year streak as the champion. He lost the belt to Bret Hart. They had an amazing match. Diesel had been champ for pretty much a year straight. Because pretty much right after that Survivor Series the year before is when he won the title from Bob Backlund. And then held it all the way to the following Survivor Series. But that match with Bret Hart was just a classic one, so I gotta say that one there in 95.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites, too. And that's probably my favorite Diesel match, and, you know, one of my favorite of all time. Just, yeah, that finish with, Diesel pushing Bret off the apron, Bret goes through the table, and then Bret basically looking like he's dead, and then Diesel, he pulls him up, and then Bret, he puts him in the powerbomb position, but then Bret slumps down, and then Diesel kind of takes his time and tries it again, but then Bret gets the quick small package to pin him, and then, you know, Diesel's reaction afterward, he's mouthing a very very bad curse word, and then he attacks Bret and attacks all the referees and power bombs everybody. It just really, really good, really, really good finish that even obviously built into more matches for them.
Yeah, definitely. That I remember the ending of that like it was yesterday with the lifeless Bret, and I was such a big Diesel fan at this moment, and I was just like, oh yeah, it was great. You know, he's got him. You know, I really didn't expect that small package. So he was just so dead. I thought it was just over. And then, so yeah, it was a great ending there. Also in 1995, one of my all-time favorite Survivor Series matches as well was the wild card match that they did that year, which was basically pitting good guys and bad guys on the same Survivor Series teams together against each other. And on one side, you had Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, the British Bulldog, and Psycho Sid. And then the other team, you had Yokozuna, Owen Hart, Razor Ramon, and Dean Douglas. And I just remember loving this one because I thought the whole concept of the wild card was a great concept that they've only done, I think, that year. They've never really gone back to that. But I love the fact that they were like, we're going to put good guys and bad guys on the teams, so we're just going to mix it up. So no one could really trust anybody. You know, Sean and Sid were getting into it on their team. And actually on the other team, Razor Ramon was the only good guy on that team. So he was getting kind of trashed by Yoko and Owen. And it was just another Survivor Series elimination match that I look back very fondly on.
Yeah,
that was also the first time you saw Ahmed Johnson when he body slammed Yokozuna. So that was like the big moment in that match too, and they were pushing him.
Pretty big, yeah. That was a fun one, yeah. And I don't know if it would mean as much today because we kind of see babyfaces and heels like mix a little more than we did, you know, back then. I mean, there was very, very defined lines, you know, and today, you know, they're a little more blurred. And when you with the concept like bragging rights, you see baby faces and heels on the same team. So yeah, it wouldn't quite work as well, but it's definitely cool and very, very much, neat thing for its time.
Definitely. So then I would jump from 95 to actually the 97, of course, because that was the Montreal Screwjob. Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. That was the last time that Bret wrestled in WWE at that time. Everybody knows the story with that one. So, of course, we can't talk about Survivor Series without talking about the good old Montreal Screwjob, which was also a great match, too, until that ending there.
Yeah.
And then I would jump to 2001, which I would probably say is my favorite Survivor Series, probably of all time. This Survivor Series really just stands out for me because this was after they had bought out WCW and the Alliance was formed. And, you know, for months we had WWF versus the Alliance. And the Survivor Series was the culmination of these brands fighting. And it was a really great card. We saw some really sweet matches. This was the pay-per-view. I'm going to point out a couple matches here. One, we saw Edge take on Test. and this was a title unification match, unifying the WCW United States Championship and WWE's Intercontinental title, with Edge winning that match and unifying the titles. At this point, Edge was actually the WCW champ, United States champion, and Test was the Intercontinental champ. And so they unified that, Edge winning the belt there. There was the WCW tag team and the WWF tag team unification match, which was the Dudley Boys taking on the Hardy Boys. And we saw the Dudley Boys go over in that one, so they unified those tag team titles. And then, of course, the big Survivor Series-style elimination match, which was Team WWF taking on the Alliance. WWF team was The Rock, Chris Jericho, Undertaker, Kane, and The Big Show, taking on the Team Alliance, which was Stone Cold, Rob Van Dam, Kurt Angle, Booker T, and Shane McMahon, which, of course, whichever team won that was going to be the superior team and the brand that would actually live on to fight another day. And, of course, that was Team WWF, and that was the end of the WCW brand. So that Survivor Series super, super stands out to me because it was just so important with the time frame of everything else that was going on.
Yeah, it was, that was a big payoff to that angle, and then there were a lot of problems with that angle, but that the final match in particular, you know, was pretty fun, and also was the best cap-off we got to the Rock and Steve Austin, you know, the Steve Austin heel turn. You know, the Rock obviously emerging as the sole survivor, you know, beating Austin when he had not, you know, beat Austin previously, you know, to do that. So it kind of capped off two feuds in a way, or two, you know, big angles in a way.
Yeah, so 2001, a real big one over the whole WCW-WWF angle. Then I would jump to 2002, which saw the debut of the Elimination Chamber, which is now obviously has made its own mark. It has its own DVD now these days, Satan's Prison. You know, this was the very first one. This is the match that you got to see. Shawn Michaels won the World Heavyweight Championship. He won this match. So this Survivor Series stands out to me just because I remember watching that very first Elimination Chamber match and just loving it. I love the concept of the cage. You know, I love the fact that it was six guys, six top-notch guys, four locked into pods that were open, that were time-released. And it was just a barbaric match. You know, those guys bled like hell back in the day in that chamber, you had Triple H in there, and Dan, Booker T, Kane. It was a very, very solid match. Of course, like I said, Shawn Michaels winning the world title for the first time. It was after his big comeback at that SummerSlam earlier in the year. It was a short-lived title reign, but it was great that, you know, he got to be involved in that first little chamber match and got to, you know, win the championship on that one. So I will fondly look back at the 2002 over that one. So you want to touch base on that one?
Yeah, that's, great match, established the Elimination Chamber and, you know, a great moment in Michaels' comeback. The match before it, the Eddie and Chavo against Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit and Edge and Rey Mysterio to win the WWE tag team titles, the Guerreros won. I really liked that match a lot, and I loved that tournament that they had to crown the WWE tag team titles. I mean, there were just some great matches in that tournament. I mean, they put some really good teams together, and just that was, you know, such good wrestling. That was kind of the peak of the SmackDown 6 era that, you know, Paul Heyman was the head writer on SmackDown, and there was some really good creative stuff, going on during that time.
Yep. Yeah, the tag team division was great on that one. I remember that match, too. That was an outstanding match. When they first launched those SmackDown WWE tag team titles, they had some really solid teams going after those belts, and yeah, it was a really good time for those tag team titles.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, 2002, so that was awesome. There's been some good matches in between since then, but my last one I'm just going to touch base on actually jumps us up to 2009, which was the triple threat match for the WWE Championship, which John Cena defended against Triple H and Shawn Michaels. That was when they were in the heat of their DX, they were back as DX moment, and, they got to fight John Cena for the belt. It was just an outstanding triple threat match. Anytime you have those guys in a match, I think it's a pretty win-win situation. So that was a a great standout. And there's been so many other ones. You know, you had Hell in a Cell with Batista and Undertaker as well. That's another good one. But that triple threat really stands out too. So those are some of my main memories of some great Survivor Series matches.
Okay. Well, I'll touch on a few as well. At the very first Survivor Series, 87, the tag team matches, Strikeforce and Young Stallions and the Rougeaus and the Killer Bees and the British Bulldogs beating the Hart Foundation, the Islanders, Demolition, Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zukov, and the New Dream Team, Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo. And, you know, just a, 37 minutes, which obviously sounds like a long match, but it's just such an incredible pace. And all these teams were just really, really, really fantastic. And it's just a really fun, great match. And the kind of cool thing is that they booked it to where, in the end, it was the lesser regarded teams, particularly the Young Stallions, who had just kind of been moved from kind of being a jobber team to, kind of getting a bit of a push. You know, they kind of stood tall in the end, and that was kind of a cool way to book that. And in 88, they had another 10-man tag team, similar one, and actually we went 42 minutes. And the cool thing about that is that they had it was Powers of Pain, the Rockers, British Bulldogs, Hart Foundation, and the Young Stallions against Demolition, Brainbusters, Volkoff and Zukov, and the Rougeaus, who are now heels, and the Conquistadors, who were very much the your generic masked jobber team, who were in outfits of all gold. And they, they kept getting beat up throughout the match, but they kept surviving, or somebody would break up a pin, so they were not eliminated. And it ended up being Powers of Pain, who were the babyfaces, and Demolition and the Conquistadors. And then as Demolition were outside, suddenly they weren't listening to Mr. Fuji, and so Mr. Fuji attacked one of them with a cane, and then they ended up going after Mr. Fuji, but then were counted out. And then suddenly they beat up Fuji at the end and then walked off and then turned babyface. And then the Powers of Pain went after they dusted Fuji off, put them in their corner, and suddenly the Powers of Pain were the heels, and then they were facing the Conquistadors, who were on the heel side but had been built up as the sympathetic baby faces for the entire match. And then they ended up beating the Conquistadors fairly quickly, but it was, now suddenly they were beating out the babyface team. So it was a really good underrated double turn. If you've gone back that far and seen that, but that's a really really good one to see.
Yeah, I don't quite remember that one. I've seen them all. I've gone back and watched them, and every single one. I don't really recall most of the ones from anything before like the '93 Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, those are the both tag team ones are definitely worth watching. Moving up to closer to your time, 1992, the Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect versus Razor Ramon and Ric Flair. And this was, it was originally supposed to be Savage and Warrior against Ramon and Flair, but then Ultimate Warrior, I think he was fired or quit or whatever. He was out, so they did a very quick but really, really well done thing where Savage offered the spot to Mr. Perfect, who was Flair's manager and who hadn't wrestled for about a year and a half. And Perfect was like, of course I'm not going to do it. And then Heenan was they did a show long storyline. It was Primetime Wrestling where, Heenan kept, saying that, of course he's not going to do it, he's not even interested anymore, and he's a manager now, and, he's not even really as good as he used to be, and that kind of thing, and that, made Perfect, made him mad to the point where he decided to go ahead and do it. And then this match was just really, really a lot of fun. And the also main event worth noting is Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in their first pay-per-view match against each other, and that's a really, really good match. And,
I do remember that one.
yeah, and Michaels was, even, before he was, really, a credible championship contender, and he and Bret had, and that was right after Bret had won the title, actually, from, he had beaten Flair at a house show, just a few weeks before, maybe, I forget if it was October or November, but it was around that time. And just a couple of other ones, because you picked a lot of the ones that I would have picked. But Survivor Series 96, Bret Hart and Steve Austin, their first match against each other, and almost as good as their WrestleMania 13 match. I mean, it's much more of like a technical style match. It was kind of, Austin was still, this was before his injuries, and he wrestled, was able to do more of a technical style, and it's a great old school match and really wonderfully done. And the other match, Psycho Sid and Shawn Michaels, then that's, by far Sid's best match. And the crowd was really, it was a Madison Square Garden crowd, and they were really behind Sid and booing Shawn kind of at this point. So it was interesting to see that crowd dynamic.
Yeah, that match was great. I was almost going to point that one out. The Sid Shawn match was great.
Yeah. And particularly great one, I think, is 2003, the Team Bischoff against Team Austin, where the Team Austin had to, Austin himself had to leave WWE if he lost the match. And it came down to Shawn being on the babyface side and Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, and Christian all being on the heel side. And Michaels, kind of out of nowhere, was able to beat Christian and Jericho despite being, bloodied. And he almost had Orton, but then Batista came out of nowhere and hit Michaels with his finishing move. And Batista bombed him, and then Orton was able to pull off the pin. And then it was kind of a thing where, Austin, had to leave, and he did kind of like a cool little emotional speech, that he had to go. But he was glad that at least he had his first match in Dallas, and this was his last time. And he was happy to go. That was kind of undercut because, they brought him back like a month later, but, at the time it was a pretty, pretty cool emotional match. And last one, I don't know, this is just kind of a fun little match. It was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, CM Punk, and the Hardys against Orton, Edge, Mike Knox, Gregory Helms, and Johnny Nitro. And
awesome one.
Yeah, and it was, all it was basically a squash for the babyfaces beating the heels, but it was just kind of fun to see that combination of guys together. I mean, Matt and Jeff hadn't been back together too long, so they were kind of fresh, and they were both more motivated, and Punk was fairly new, and DX was still kind of in its hot period, and it was just kind of cool to see all of them together. And they kind of all were like along together when they did the Suck It chant. I think even like Triple H and and CM Punk were right next to each other. It kind of put Punk kind of on their level. And I really wish that the Hardys had kind of kept their stuff together, and then we'd kind of seen like just maybe like a TV or maybe even a pay-per-view DX and Hardys match. I think that would have been really cool.
Yeah, that would have been great. That Survivor Series match was really good. I remember loving that team, especially the DX, the Hardys, and CM Punk was just at his peak right there. After debuting, he was still on ECW, and that was a great match.
Yeah, I mean, just really fun, just a really fun little match. So, yeah, that's those are our Survivor Series memories. So we'll close.
Let's not forget that also was we got the debut of Rocky Maivia at the Survivor Series as well.
We did. That's true. Absolutely. And of course,
at least somebody else debuted too at Survivor Series. Am I right? Trying to think, there's another pretty big one. you know, of course, Survivor Series, like we talked about before, gave us the Undertaker.
That was pretty big. Yeah,
that was pretty big.
We also had the, but even bigger than both of those. Do you know what the other big debut was at Survivor Series?
The Gobbledygooker.
That is correct. Come on, that was a huge deal. That's like WrestleCraft's number one, or I don't know if it's number one, but it's you know, it's that's the you know, the WrestleCraft guys. They're all over that. So you know, that's one of the more notorious debuts. You know, you got a big chicken, or I guess turkey. You got a big turkey dancing with Mean Gene Oakland. What's better than that?
Yeah, and they made you wait the whole pay-per-view to see it.
Yeah. Yes, that's even worse maybe than the finish of Orton and Barrett on at Bragging Rights.
I think the Gooker win that one's a little worse than the ending.
If the Gooker had run and attacked Wade Barrett, then maybe that would have been a better finish. I don't know.
Yeah. The sad thing is we saw him come out a couple of times since, so hopefully we have seen the last of the Gobbledygooker.
Oh, come on. The Gooker, he just wants to dance and sing and to jerk in a straw. I mean, what's wrong with that? All right. Well, we got a few questions to close the show coming from Twitter. And the first one comes from Pure Charger, and he asks, where are we going with this mystery GM, and what was the point? So, what do you think of where are we going with the mystery GM?
Oh my God, it's a good question. You know, I hope we're going with it is that it's over sooner than later. You know, I think this was done originally out of the fact that they needed another GM, and they truly didn't know what to do at the moment. So they figured we're just going to do this anonymous thing, and we'll probably do it for like a month, and you know, and then we'll figure out who we're going to replace them with. The reason I think it's gone on so long is I think for some reason they really enjoy the heat that computer gets every time it goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- apologies I've just received an anonymous email from the Raw GM. And I quote, you know, I think WWE's enjoying stringing everybody along in this way, so that is why it's lasted as long as it is. I truly don't know what it's going to turn out to be. I'll still probably go the Triple H route. I think, you know, if he's still hurt and he's trying to rehab, you know, that'll be a good angle to get him back on TV. You know, I can't see anybody else that they would really do with it unless they bring in somebody just completely off the radar. But, you know, I just hope that they are coming close to, you know, I thought we were getting there a couple weeks ago, but now it seems to the direction has kind of gone away from figuring out who it is, and now it's just more of a standard thing that's on the show, so.
Yeah, I, you know, I guess it's kind of silly. I mean, it's not the end of the world. You know, I think there's a good chance they may not even resolve it. They may just, you know, eventually it'll run its course and then they'll, have somebody, well, I guess they, you know, I guess at the end they have to reveal. I mean, it might end up being somebody silly, but I guess it'd be pretty tough to, not at least eventually answer that question as you're writing that character off of television, even if it's, you know, somebody like Harvey Wolfman or somebody stupid like that, you know, or the Gobbledygooker maybe, or, you know, somebody like that. Who knows? But yeah, I, you know, it's fine. I don't have like a huge problem with it. I, you know, I think the general manager itself is kind of a played out concept. Like, I just think that you can just have a show and you don't have to have somebody making announcements. You can just have the, you know, the announcers can be there just to announce that matches are happening. And, you know, yeah, I don't like the whole, you know, wrestler is fighting with the promoter, the authority figure. Just like, it just all feels like copy of like Austin McMahon over again, you know? And it just, it feels like sort of an unnecessary thing.
I don't know. I think they need to have some sort of an authority figure. If they get rid of the GMs, then they need to have somebody that's you know, like they used to do back in the day where there was a president, you know,
or
a commissioner. You know, they need somebody that will either oversee the brands or stick with the GMs because, you know, I think it needs to have somebody that is an authority figure that says, okay, here's your matches. I'm going to sanction this. I want to do this rather than just, you know, random matches that just seem to be thrown together. I think they need to spice it up. I think they need to do something different. Back in the day, I mean, I loved it. You know, I thought when Bischoff was the GM of Raw was probably the greatest times that Raw's, you know, I think the original, I'm going to go back to the actual brand split and say the original of Ric Flair having Raw and Vince McMahon having SmackDown was awesome, you know, and then when Eric Bischoff had Raw and Stephanie McMahon had SmackDown and then when Paul Heyman had SmackDown, you know, those were awesome GMs and it really kept the flow of the shows going. You know, Raw was such a great dynamic with Bischoff running it. You know, and then they got away from that. You know, I've grown used to Teddy Long, you know, doing it on SmackDown, but even that needs to change. You know, I mean, they kind of got away from it for a little bit when he, you know, kind of got demoted and Vicky was doing it, but, you know, it's been done. I think they need to spice it up. I think they should have two brand new GMs on both shows and kind of have the rivalry going again like they used to back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can have like Vince sort of be the, you know, for like, you know, the, in the Jack Tunney role and he can make, you know, he can make big announcements or whatever and set things up. But yeah, I just don't like it week to week. I feel like I just kind of groan every time I see like, oh, well, now we're going to bring it. Like, especially on SmackDown, it's like, they'll have a couple guys fighting and then they'll have the GM come out and then suddenly, instantly, he will have a solution to the problem. It's like, he doesn't even have to like think about it. It's just like, I mean, it's just completely, and even, you know, with the GM and, you know, the speed of the emails and that sort of thing, it feels like it's very much a formula and it feels lazy. And I just, you know, I mean, I can, you know, I know there are like people who, you know, I know there are people like there, obviously there's a commissioner in any sport in basketball, but you know, you don't see David Stern, like, you know, being out there making announcements every single game. You know, he rules on things when necessary. And, you know, I don't think you need it every week. You can have, you know, if you have a big thing you need to set up, fine. You know, you have him involved and it's important when he's involved, but when he's involved, or she's involved every single week, it just, you know, it's just a standard part of the show and it's not special. So I think you can just do without it. You can give more TV time to your wrestlers rather than an authority figure. I just think it's better to have it without it. I think at least in one of the brands, like if you want to have a GM in one brand and not have a strong authority figure on the other brand, I think, you know, makes the shows a little different from each other. I think that's something worth exploring.
I think my favorite thing that I get a kick out of with GMs is when, you know, two guys are arguing and they want to fight and the GM can come out and say, you know, oh, you guys want to fight? All right, I'll tell you what, you're going to fight right now. You know, give me a ref. And it always cracks me up just thinking like, you know, don't they already have the 2-hour time slot filled with what they're going to do?
Right.
That they can have a spontaneous match like that with no planning and just on the spot because the heat is of the moment. You know, like I'd be like, all right, next week I'm going to have you do it because this 2 hours is already filled with what we scheduled a couple of days ago. So, yeah, that always cracks me up.
Right, yeah.
So spontaneously put something together like that.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like it feels like it just feels like things are like so, like when they're so haphazard like that, it feels like, well, you know, not much thought is going into this. And, you know, so why, like, you know, it makes it feel less important, I guess, you know, which maybe it's silly, but whatever. So next question comes from Chip Valentine, and he asks, does the endless cycle of Undertaker wrestling for 2 months and then leaving for 6 to 8 months for surgery worth his price tag?
No. it's getting pretty ridiculous with Undertaker now. He should have probably hung it up last year or the year before. you know, take away his WrestleMania matches. You know, it just the injuries are just getting ridiculous. I mean, the guy gets hurt over the most simplest things. I mean, I think he got like 3 injuries with that one match with Rey Mysterio that took him out for the whole, you know, vegetative state angle. It's getting bad. I mean, there's got to be a point where you sit and say, maybe I should hang it up. And I think he's trying to hold on too long. You know, this guy already, I mean, he's earned what he's got, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, for somebody that can, you know, he does, he already, you know, when everybody else is on the road 300 days a year, he's on the road maybe 100. You know, he's only doing every other SmackDown, if that, you know, and then maybe, you know, the pay-per-view if they need him, and then the rest of the time he's injured and he's hurt, you know, sitting at home doing nothing anyway. So, yeah, he's probably not worth his price tag anymore. And I think that if he does get back in time for this WrestleMania, I think that this should be his last, because the injuries are – he's going to end up really hurting himself. He's going to want to – I think he should retire while he can still walk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to criticize him for wanting to still go, because, A, when he's there, his matches are still pretty good, you know, usually, particularly when he's got the right opponent with him. He's still popular, you know, still drawing, a decent audience. I don't think he should be like a dominant force on the main event scene. And I think he should stay away from the title. Especially when it's hard to count on him, because of injuries. But as far as, you know, him being around and, you know, and doing things, I mean, you know, I had no problem with him being a part-time guy who shows up, you know, once a year and does a 2-month program or something like that. I think that's fine. You know, I think actually that's a better way to use your legends. I think TNA could kind of learn that lesson a little bit. So yeah, I don't really have a problem with him, as long as you're not centering the shows around him too much.
No, I agree with that. I mean, he should be used in more of a special attraction type state. You know, it should be like a cool, like, ooh, it's The Undertaker, and just have him come out here and there and kind of do his thing. But, yeah, they should definitely keep him away from the title at this point.
All right. Well, next question comes from Jed from the 801. His topic is, will John Cena go back to the rapper mentality? I say no. All right.
No, end of question.
Okay.
I know he's still trying to do it. I heard he's making another CD, but as far as doing that as a gimmick on TV, I don't ever see him going back to that.
Yeah, which I thought those promos were good. So and they're a lot better than most of his promos now. So
It was cool at the moment. It was good for the time, but that time has passed, and it wouldn't make sense these days.
He could do it like once a year, maybe. And yeah, he did one like 2 or 3 years ago, maybe, or maybe it was even longer than that. But you're right. It's time has passed, and I think just John Cena needs a better sense of humor, and I think he'd be okay.
His character is just too different now. You know, I mean, it worked with the way he was back then. He was supposed to be a thug, and he was the doctor of thugonomics, and he was just, that was just his character. You know, he rapped against everybody. But now he's too much of, you know, his character is just completely different nowadays, and it wouldn't make sense. So, and I think he knows that, and, you know, he's not going to, he will never go back to that. I'd be super, super shocked if he ever did. He can bust a freestyle here and there, but he'll never go back to that being a full-time gimmick. Although I wish he'd go back to that theme song, because his Thugonomics song is way better than what he has now.
I don't know, his theme song, it's so, like, it'd be like changing, like, Hogan's theme song from, you know, Real American, which I know he eventually did with the Hendrix song, but that was when he was a heel. That was kind of a different deal, but...
He needs new theme music, though. I'm going to put that out there right now, though. I think, you know, Cena's song is The Time Is Now. That thing's way played out. He's had that song now for probably 6 years. He needs an update. He needs to change it up, for sure.
Yeah. I'm not gonna. I don't have a strong feeling either way. I can see changing it, but I can also see that, you know, it's so identified with him that it's hard to get fans to adjust to a new song. Although with Cena, it probably wouldn't be that difficult. But
yeah.
Next question is from Latin World Order, who wants to know what's up with Santino getting a kind of a big push. He was obviously part of Bragging Rights, which I know you were not a huge fan of, but I didn't particularly mind. And then he got a fluke win over Sheamus tonight on Raw.
That's a good question. I don't really know why all of a sudden they're kind of giving him this push. Let me set the record straight on Santino. I like his character. I think he's hilarious. I think he's a real likable guy. He makes me, crack up. But in the ring, I just think that they've ruined him. When he first debuted and he became the Intercontinental Champion with that fluke win over Umaga, I mean, he's got some wrestling skills, but they have made him such a joke in the ring now that I can't take him serious. As funny and as cool as it is for him to do the Cobra, that's a joke of a finishing move, and the setup of it is stupid. It's funny, but I can't take him serious. So for me to like sit there and back him and think that, he's gonna ever be anything more than just a joke, is hard to believe. Yeah, it was a fluke win. I don't really think this is gonna lead to any huge push for Santino. I think this is just, it was a nice little nod to put him on the team. I think tonight it was more of Sheamus being the big bully, saying, "Hey, I'm gonna take you out," and everybody's like, "Oh crap, he's gonna go out there, he's gonna get creamed." And, with the help of John Morrison, he was able to get a, fluke little roll-up pin. And probably next week they're going to rematch, and Sheamus is going to kill him in probably 30 seconds. So, I don't think this is going to lead to anything more than what it is. I just think, he's been pretty much punked out for the last year or so, and they're just kind of giving him a little bit of retribution right now. So, but yeah, Santino as a wrestler, like I said, as a stand-up comedian act, awesome. As a wrestler, it's hard to take him, seriously. We were talking about the video game earlier. I've never even used this character one time on the video game because I can't even in a video game world, I can't imagine winning a match with this character. So I'll pass on Santino.
Yeah, Santino's pretty likable. I think his comedy was a lot better when he was a heel, but he can be funny sometimes. I assume that was kind of a thing. A, I think it was just their idea for building to Morrison and Sheamus, which I never like one guy losing a match and then, like, okay, this guy lost a match. We're gonna cost each other matches, so we're gonna be losers, and then now you're gonna want to see us fight. I always think that's kind of dumb. Maybe it's like one of those like goofy WWE things where, the Smarks were mad that Daniel Bryan couldn't beat Sheamus, so now we're gonna have book Santino against Sheamus just because we're gonna show people because we're they're nerds and we're cool, that kind of thing. But I mean, he's entertaining enough on television. Yeah, the in-ring, he doesn't have a lot of credibility in ring. I didn't have a problem with him being in the Bragging Rights match because I think like it's good to have like a mix of like talent levels, and you could have kind of done a thing where like, oh, Santino's on our team. How are we going to, back before he knew it was an elimination style match, it's like, how are we going to hide Santino and keep him from losing the match, kind of thing. Which may not be like the best endorsement of him, but he's a comedy character, so it's fine, I guess.
Yeah, I heard they were making a TV show with him. He was filming a while ago, actually, when he was doing the angle with Beth Phoenix as his girlfriend. They were doing some kind of pilot with him and filming some episodes for a comedy show.
Yeah, wasn't Kozlov involved in that too?
Was that?
I thought Kozlov was involved in that too.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, he might have become involved later on down the road, but I mean, this started so long ago. I haven't heard much about it recently, but that's something I'd be, very curious to see. I mean, like I said, I think on the comedy side, he's a great character to have him around. I loved his Intercontinental title run when he was trying to beat Honky Tonk Man's record, and we had the Honkamita every
Yes.
week. you know, and you know, and that was, you know, I'm only, you know, 100 days away from the, being the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all the times, you know, and it was just, I mean, that time was just hilarious, and I really enjoyed him at that moment, but like I said, I mean, it's WWE's fault that I don't take him seriously because of the way they portrayed him, so, you know, maybe one day they'll be able to get off of that, but I think they've done it for so long now, you know, it's going to be hard to do.
Definitely. Last question is from TheChris104, and he wants to know who's winning the Royal Rumble.
Who's winning the Royal Rumble? That's a good one.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about that yet.
I haven't either.
Why don't you go first? Give me a second to think about that.
Who is going to win the Royal Rumble? It's going to be a wrestler. Who wrestles in WWE? Well, okay, they like to have a guy return from injury and win it. That's kind of been the thing lately. But they did that last year, so they probably won't do it again this year. Let's see. Well, it depends. See, it used to be kind of easier to kind of at least get an idea because they would – obviously, you kind of know who was going to be champion, so and you would kind of know what match would be natural. But now that they have, like, the Elimination Chamber kind of throwing everything off a little bit, it's kind of harder, you know, it's kind of harder to know. Now it's almost like the Royal Rumble winner is, like, obviously isn't the champion, but is, like, in the champion's position, as in, you know, that's the one you know they're going to face, and now you're trying to find out, you know, who's going to face them. It's, you know, it's almost like earning the Royal Rumble shot earning the WrestleMania shot is the thing itself. But I will guess CM Punk.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one. I'm gonna go with Triple H.
Okay, yeah, that I could definitely see that.
Either he's gonna return at the Royal Rumble if they push off it, you know, they could end up, you know, we are already going in November, so he could easily, you know, skip a couple more months and be the surprise entrant in the Rumble, or even if he does debut a little bit before it, I think, you know, he's been gone for so long now that obviously he's going to probably be pushed to the moon when he does get back, and, you know, if a lot of it, you know, it's going to be easier, to, like you said, it's going to be a little bit easier to see based on who's the champ at the time, you know, that maybe what do we know? I mean, maybe Sheamus will have the belt back at this point, and then obviously Triple H wins the Rumble. He goes after Sheamus to kind of go off that feud. Miz could maybe even win it, just, you know, on top of, you know, already having the briefcase, just to throw in those, and added credibility to his, you know, resume. But at this point, I would say probably, you know, my easiest guess at this point would probably be Triple H.
Yeah, I could see, you know, I guess Sheamus would make some sense. Also, being younger, John Morrison, you know, it's kind of a chance. I'm just kind of thinking the guys that could elevate with the Royal Rumble win, because that kind of used to be the thing they would do, and they've kind of backed off that a little bit lately. Edge and Orton and Cena were all, you know, very established guys. Didn't Undertaker win in 07?
Yeah.
So last time really was Ray in 06, where, you know, a guy who hadn't been at that level before, you know, earning the shot. So it's, you know, it's been quite a while. Punk wouldn't, you know, Punk's obviously been champion, but still maybe a Royal Rumble win would kind of put him at a different level a little bit, you know, at least a little bit higher, you know, toward the very, very top, you know, rather than maybe, you know, second from the top kind of thing.
Another good one they could maybe go with would be based off the injury scale too, depending on how far he's come along, could be Christian. Christian could come back at that moment. You know, Edge could actually be the champion and be could be back as a heel at that moment. You know, we could finally get our Edge and Christian at WrestleMania. That I think would be a huge match in its own right.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you know, that's a possibility. You could also have Christian be the heel and have Edge stay the babyface if you don't want to turn Edge again, which I think that might be one too many turns in a shorter period of time. But
The tricky thing, though, with that, though, is usually when these guys come back from injury, they're just so cheered because people are happy to have them back that it's kind of hard to come back, you know, after you've been gone for 6 months and be automatically a heel, you know, especially Christian.
Yeah.
I think the response would be too overwhelming for him as a comeback, you know.
Yeah, he'd have to be the face at the show, but maybe you could turn him after that. But there's a lot of different things you could do, or, you know. Those are all pretty good ideas. Yeah, someone will win it, so just
yeah,
be patient.
I guarantee one of 30 men will win the Royal Rumble this year.
At least one, perhaps more.
Yeah, as long as both of feet touch the ground.
Yeah.
We could have a Lex Luger, Bret Hart situation on our hands again.
Yeah, it's possible. Okay, well, Don, tell everybody where they can find you.
Of course. You can find us all on Twitter, twitter.com/DXDonMega. Follow the show as well, twitter.com/FutureEndeavors. You can also find us on Facebook and also on our own website directly, which is future-endeavors.com. Definitely check out the website. I've been doing a lot of work on it lately. You can listen to all our episodes of Future Endeavors on there. There's a calendar on there with all the events coming up. There's, you know, a pay-per-view section that I have updated with all the card announcements. I also put predictions on there once the card is finalized. There's also a champion section on there where you can view the current champions in WWE, UFC, TNA, ROH. There's a lot of info on the website, so definitely check out future-endeavors.com.
Cool. Well, sounds great, and everyone should check out the show Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And thanks a lot for doing the show. Great times as always.
Of course, anytime.
And you can check us out at wrestlespective.podbean.com. And lots of great radio shows and blog posts for you to check out. And you can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/WrestlePerspective, or facebook.com/WrestlePerspective. Or you can get a hold of us by email, WrestlePerspective@gmail.com. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.